Thank you, Mr. Fay, for the introduction. It's good to be among family. It's extended family. It was a few years ago at the feast, actually. We were in Escondido, and Mr. Bill Bradford, Sr., he came over to me, and he introduced himself, and he said, "As I understand it, we're family." I said, "We are." And he traced and recounted back the exact relationship, and it all gets pretty convoluted. I remember my father trying to explain to me the concept of a first cousin once removed versus second cousins versus third cousins, and it gets very interesting. But thank you for having us here in Chicago. It's really, really a pleasure to be here. I'd like you to turn over to Numbers 28. Numbers 28 and verse 9, you'll see a command that was given to ancient Israel about the Sabbath. Numbers 28 and verse 9. On the Sabbath day, he said, they were to offer as burnt offerings two male lambs, 1 year old without defect, and 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour, mixed with oil as a grain offering and its drink offering. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath, in addition to the continual burnt offering and its drink offering. So there's a command here to do this special additional burnt offering. Now you'll notice it refers to, this is in addition to the continual burnt offering and its drink offering. If you jump up a few verses, up to verse 3. You shall say to them, this is the offering by fire which you shall offer to the Lord. Two male lambs, 1 year old, without defect, as a continual burnt offering every day. You shall offer the one lamb in the morning, and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. So there was this commanded burnt offering that happened daily. You might remember hearing about the morning and the evening sacrifices. This is what it's referring to. These were burnt offerings. And then in addition, there was a special burnt offering given on the Sabbath day. So two additional. If you drop down a little ways, next chapter, chapter 29. On the 15th day of the seventh month, Feast of Tabernacles, this is in verse 12. You shall have a holy convocation. We're in Numbers 29 and verse 12. You shall do no laborious work, and you shall observe a feast to the Lord for 7 days. You shall present, again, another burnt offering, an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord. 13 bulls, 2 rams, 14 male lambs, 1 year old, which are without defect, and their grain offering. You'll notice in verse 17, on the second day, 12 bulls, 2 rams, 14 male lambs. These are all burnt offerings. And it goes through and lists day after day all of these offerings that were, these burnt offerings that were given. And these are very specifically burnt offerings. By the end of the Feast of Tabernacles, they'd offered 70 bulls, 14 rams, and 98 lambs, in addition to the daily and the Sabbath sacrifices. So there were a whole lot of these burnt offerings being offered up. This was a big part of the work that was done by the priests during the feast and on the Sabbath day. This was not a simple offering. It involved a lot. Today, if you're looking for an SPS, today, what I want to review is this specific variety of the offerings, the burnt offering. And I want to show how it is still relevant to us as Christians. Because there's a lot that we can learn from the offerings in general. And from the burnt offering specifically, there's a lot that we can learn from it. If you'll turn over to Hebrews 9, we'll review something briefly. I think we all recognize that the offerings pointed to something. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 9. Hebrews 9 and verse 9. It's talking about symbols for the present time. Accordingly, both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make the worshiper perfect in conscience. So these were, again, this is referring to the sacrifices when he's talking about the symbols for the present time. Verse 10, since they relate only to food and drink and various washings, regulations for the body imposed until a time of reformation. So these things were pointing to something in the future, a time of reformation when, again, the priesthood was changed. And it says when the priesthood is changed, then by necessity the law has, there are things about the law that change. Right? Notice it doesn't say there are things about the law that are removed, but that there are things about the law, the offerings that were there, that are changed. There's something different. They have a different fullness. And so I think when we look at this and we read through, let's read verse 11. When Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation, and not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. This is not the temporary redemption that some of the sacrifices were there to symbolize. This was something permanent. And so I think when we look and we read through, especially through the book of Hebrews, we see and we understand that the sacrifices point to Jesus Christ and that he fulfilled them. And so in that sense, they are still alive and active in the person of Jesus Christ, in what he did and in what he is. Those were symbols that point to the reality. So if we accept that the sacrifices were a shadow of what is to come, if we accept that they are types of something, then we should expect that they teach us about him and that there are things that we can learn about him from those types. So today I'd like to go back and look specifically at one of those types because the offerings in general are a very big topic and they cover a lot. But I'd like to look at the burnt offering because, again, it's involved in so many of the worship days that we love to celebrate. It's a big part of atonement. It's a big part of the Sabbath. It's a big part of the Feast of Tabernacles. So let's go back and take a look at the burnt offering. If you'll turn over to Leviticus 1. Leviticus chapter 1 and verse 3. God is instructing Moses about the offerings and what to tell the people. And in verse 3, he says, if his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer it, a male without defect. He shall offer it at the doorway of the tent of meeting, that he may be accepted before the Lord. He shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering, that it may be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. This is a very interesting offering because the first point I want to note about this is that this offering was there to make the offerer acceptable to God. It says that this was there to make him acceptable, to be accepted before him. In the New King James Version, you might see that this is translated of his own free will. Same words that are also translated, that he may be accepted. It's also translated of his own free will. The former translation is probably preferable. As if you look at verse 4, again it says that it may be accepted for him. The wording there really seems to indicate that this was to make him acceptable, that he may be accepted. And again, that it should make atonement for him. Now, typically when we think about atonement, we think about the sin offering. Especially on the Day of Atonement, we think about the goats that were offered. We think about the sin offering that was made, the two goats, and the blood that was sprinkled. But right there alongside the sin offering that was offered, there was a burnt offering. There were two. When you go back and you look through those the ceremony for atonement. There was the sin offering that was offered first, and he sprinkled this on the mercy seat. And then the priest came out of the Holy of Holies, and he took blood from his burnt offering, and he went back in, and he sprinkled blood again on the mercy seat, and he came back out. There was a sin offering first, and then there was a burnt offering. And this burnt offering was an integral part of atonement, of oneness with God. Sin offering alone does not bring atonement. There's this other element to it. There's this burnt offering that was also made on the Day of Atonement. And again, as it says here in verse 3, we see, or in verse 4, that it may be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. So there's something to this that is very interesting. Because we can see again that atonement is not complete only with the removal of sin. There's this element too. There's this element of being acceptable to God. God wants more than just forgiveness of sin. He also wants to accept us. He wants us to be one with him. He wants us to be a part of his family. He wants us to be there with him. So this is a big part of atonement. If you turn over to Hebrews 7, we see that Jesus Christ, he offered himself. And any offering, there are at least four parties involved, you might say. There's the offerer, the one bringing the offering. There's the offering itself, which was sometimes a living thing. There's the priest. And there's God the Father. And there are those four parties that are always there involved in this offering. Here in Hebrews 7, verse 27, we see that Jesus Christ plays multiple roles here. Hebrews 7 and verse 27, Jesus Christ does not need daily, like those high priests, the high priests of Israel, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people, because this he did once for all when he offered up himself. So he came and he offered himself. And we see the result of that. If you turn over a few chapters to Hebrews 10, Hebrews 10 and verse 11. Every priest stands daily ministering and offering time after time the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. Verse 12. But he, having offered one sacrifice for sins for all time, sat down at the right hand of God. He was accepted. So he came and he brought an offering. He offered himself. And he was accepted by God. There was something about his sacrifice, and we'll go into this more fully, but there's this burnt offering that is to make one acceptable. And Jesus Christ came and offered himself, and he was acceptable. And he was not acceptable simply because of his death. There's more to it than that. He came and offered, and he was accepted. And that was the intent of this burnt offering. It was something that was brought and it was offered, and it made the offerer acceptable before God. Second point I'd like to make about this burnt offering is that the focus of this offering, and this is what I was alluding to, the focus of this offering was not the death. It was not the death of the thing being offered. It was life. It was a life that was being given. It was not the death of the thing, it was the life that was being given. I know sometimes it's kind of a little bit muddy, right? You bring an animal and the animal is killed and that's the offering. And in the sin offering, for example, in the trespass offering, the death is what is important. It symbolizes the death, right? It's the symbolic death of the offerer, right? And the blood was there sort of symbolically covering over their sins. This is not about the death so much. This is about the life. This is about a life that's being offered. Leviticus 1, in verse 8, we'll continue to read about the burnt offering here. Leviticus 1, in verse 8. Then Aaron's sons, the priests, shall arrange the pieces, the head, and the suet over the wood which is on the fire that is on the altar. Its entrails, however, and its legs he shall wash with water, and the priest shall offer up in smoke all of it on the altar for a burnt offering. He was to take the whole thing. The whole thing was going to be offered on the altar. This is unique among all of the offerings that he commanded. No other offering was taken and offered completely on the altar. The grain offerings, for example, they were not a life. They were something that were brought and they were offered, but it was not a life that was offered on the altar. The peace offerings were something that was brought. It was a living thing, but part of it was burned on the altar, part of it was consumed by the priest, and part of it was consumed by the offerer. And there's some symbolism in there. It was a peace offering. The sin offering was something that was not offered on the altar. It was taken outside of the camp and burned outside of God's presence, essentially, as Jesus Christ was taken out. The trespass offering, again, it was not even always a living offering. Sometimes it was of grain and not totally consumed. So the burnt offering is unique in that it was a life that was burned completely on the altar in the tabernacle in God's presence. And it was all burnt up. None of it was saved for the offerer. None of it was saved for the priest. This is something that we see Jesus Christ symbolically living out. And this is something that we see him teaching us. If you turn over to Matthew 22. Matthew 22 and verse 37. This should be familiar to you. Verse 36, Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And in verse 37, he said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. There's not part of that that you hold back. There's not part of your life. There's not part of my life that I should be sort of keeping off on the side and saying, well, this bit is mine and I'm keeping it for me. No, it's the whole thing. The head, the legs. You see all of these pieces described, right? In the same way that we have here, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, all of it. Just as with the burnt offering, he said, take all of it. You take all of it and you burn it. You offer it up. The whole thing. There was nothing reserved. As a sidebar, I'd like to go over to Genesis 22, because I think maybe this will help illustrate what we're looking at here. Genesis 22. Verse 2. Let's start in verse 1. Genesis 22. In verse 1. Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. When God commanded Abraham to take Isaac and offer him, he was not commanding him to offer a sin offering. He was not commanding him to offer some sort of peace offering. He was commanding him to offer a burnt offering. And notice the focus of the offering was that he was giving a life. There was no expectation here that Isaac's blood was somehow going to cover Abraham's sins. There was no thought of redemption somehow through Isaac. This is Abraham coming and bringing his son willingly and willingly giving a life to God. And Abraham was willing to do that. Again, reckoning that God could raise him if that was God's intent, as Paul explains over in Hebrews. But we see that, again, the focus here, the burnt offering is something that is about offering your whole life while you are living. This is not something that's about offering up your life in death. This is about offering up your life while you are alive. And this is exactly what we see Jesus Christ doing. Jesus Christ lived a life that was dedicated every moment to doing his Father's will. His life is something that we can look at then as an offering. It was something that he came and he gave. He gave of himself, and that he divested himself of being God. He offered himself as a man and came and gave himself up as God and lived as a man and offered up 33 and a half years of perfect life before he gave himself in death. And it's that 33 and a half years that we can look at as this burnt offering, as something that was done fully and completely, totally given over to God, totally burned up. He was totally on fire, you could say, for his Father. And so we see him saying things like this: "My meat is to do the will of him who sent me." He said, "I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." And when he's praying to God at the very end of his life, "Not my will, but yours be done." So we see time and time again, repeated over and over and over and over. He says, "I'm not here to do my own thing. I am here to give myself completely over to my Father, to do everything that he wants, to put my will aside, speak his words, do his work." And that was what Jesus Christ's life was about. That was his burnt offering. That's what this is pointing us toward. So again, it's about offering up a life. It's not about the death. It's offering the life. Third point I'd like to make on this is that it's something we see over in Leviticus 1 and at the end of verse 9 here. Let's go back to Leviticus 1. In verse 9, "Its entrails, however, and its legs he shall wash with water, and the priest shall offer up in smoke all of it on the altar for a burnt offering, an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to the Lord." It says here that this offering was a soothing aroma, a sweet savor to God. Now the word here for burnt, for burnt offering, literally means ascending. Same word used to describe the offering that Abraham made of Isaac, means ascending. It's something that ascended to God, that smelled good to him. It pleases God. While we were in the Dells, at one point we were driving around and we had our windows cracked because the weather was beautiful up there. And we drove past a steakhouse. And the smell that came in our windows from that steakhouse was just incredible. Even my little boys sort of perked up. "What is that?" Of course, they thought it smelled like hot dogs. But they smelled something and they thought it just smelled amazing. They "Can we go eat there? Can we have that? Can we go eat?" It wasn't dinner time. They wanted to stop and eat. It smelled that good. It's that kind of thing. If you've ever driven past a really aromatic steakhouse, if you've ever really just stood outside a campfire and smelled, you know, meat burning on the campfire, something cooking, it's that kind of scent. It's a sweet savor, a sweet aroma. You'll notice in verse 6 here, In Leviticus 1 and verse 6, it says, he shall skin the burnt offering and cut it into its pieces. So this was a skinned offering. If you've ever smelled hair on a fire, you know that that's not a sweet aroma. This was something that didn't have any... The skin was removed and could actually be kept by the priests. But this whole offering, it was a meat offering. And again, we see that the entrails and the legs and whatnot, they were washed with water. Right, so that was all clean. Everything was clean, and it was just, you know, a whole cow, right? A whole bull that's going on to the altar and being burned. And that smell must have been pretty amazing. And again, this happened at least twice a day, every day. And then again, a double portion on the Sabbath, and 70 of these over the course of the Feast of Tabernacles. This is a sweet savor. This is something that smells really good. Probably made everybody want to go out to the steakhouse. This is not said of some of the other offerings. This is not said of the sin offering or the trespass offering. There are a couple of the offerings that are referred to as being sweet savor offerings, as a sweet aroma to the Lord, things that pleased him. And these are things that are offered, again, in the tabernacle, on the altar before God, things that pleased him that he appreciates. But this is not said of the sin offering or the trespass offering. Those things were burned outside of the camp, and nowhere does it talk about those as being a sweet savor offering to God. The burnt offering is a sweet savor offering. So if we are thinking about the offering of a life, right, that's something that God takes great pleasure in. When Jesus Christ was baptized, you'll remember God saying, "This is my Son in whom I am well pleased." God was pleased with what he had offered, the 30 years of his life that he had offered up to that point. Before he started his ministry, God was well pleased with what he had offered already. And again, then he finished out that life very strongly. There's no mention of being pleased in death. We know that God says that he's not pleased at the death of the wicked. There's no pleasure in the death. God's pleased with the life that is offered. Our lives too, when our lives are offered over to him fully and given over to him fully, God is pleased with that. That's something that's a sweet savor to him, something that he loves and appreciates. Let's turn over to Ephesians 5. Because we see that Paul makes some of the logical leaps for us with what these things mean, with how these things apply. Ephesians 5 and verse 1. "Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." Now notice here, this is not referring to Jesus Christ's death. This is talking about us emulating Christ, and it's talking about his offering, how he offered himself up as a fragrant aroma. This is not referring to his offering in death. This is not referring to the sin offering that he fulfilled. This is referring to his life. And so Paul's saying, Jesus Christ did this, therefore, here's what we ought to do. We ought to be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love just as Jesus Christ also loved you. He takes this step and he says, this is what Jesus Christ did. This is how he lived. This is how he offered himself in life. This is our duty. This is our responsibility now, is to follow through on that. We're called to imitate his fulfillment of the burnt offering. Romans 12. Romans 12 and verse 1. This was something that was on Paul's mind. This is something that he thought about. And obviously he had more experience with the sacrifices and more understanding of the sacrifices than I think we do in general today. This is something that he saw. Again, he must have seen so much meaning in these types, because he drops these little bits in here into his letters where he refers back to these sacrifices as something that is meaningful for us. Again, a therefore, the beginning of chapter 12, in verse 1 in Romans. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. Again, not offering yourself. This isn't talking about offering yourself up in death. This isn't saying go out and martyr yourselves. This is not about the death. It's saying present your bodies as a living and a holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Or in some translations, which is your reasonable service. It says this is your reasonable service. It's reasonable to expect this of us. Why? Because if we look at this, and we look and we see that because of Jesus Christ, with Jesus Christ living in us, right, with the repentance that we can come before God with, we're already acceptable before God. Right? That veil has been torn. We can go right to God and talk to Him. We have atonement with God in that sense. We don't go to some priest and talk to some priest. Jesus Christ doesn't even say, well, come talk to me first and I'll take it to the Father. Jesus Christ says, go talk to the Father in my name. So in that sense, we already have sort of the fulfillment of what this offering pictured. Remember, this offering pictured atonement and acceptability before God. And in Jesus Christ, we have that atonement. The veil is torn. We're acceptable before Him. Not fully acceptable, right? We're still overcoming sin. He's working with us on that, right? But He sees us as acceptable. He chooses to look on us as acceptable. And we have that atonement. So we have the end of the sacrifice. We have the whole point of the sacrifice. So what Paul is saying is that our reasonable service is to emulate the walk that led up to what we have now. If we have the end of it, we're expected to live as Jesus Christ lived. We're expected to emulate all that He did in giving Himself over, giving His life over so fully and so completely. So having been fed a very full feast this year, let's take these messages that we've learned over the last week, the things that we're going to continue learning over the course of our lives. Let's emulate Jesus Christ more fully, not holding back, but giving up everything, giving it our all, giving ourselves up completely, and giving our whole will to our Father.